Om Namah Bhagavate. ते वासुदेवाय We're doing two verses today. Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, Text 5 and 6. Because accidentally, Text 5 was scheduled for Saturday. So, to make sure it gets done, I'm doing 5 and 6, which was scheduled for today. So the word meanings to Text 5. Taptam, having undergone austerities, tapaha, penance, vivida loka, different planetary systems, Sushrikshaya, desiring to create May of mind, Adal, at first, Sanat, from the personality of Godhead, Swatapasaha, by dint of my own penance, Saha, he, the Lord, Chatu Sana, the four bachelors named Sanat Kumar, Sanaka, Sanandana, and Sanatana, Abhut, appeared, Prak, previous, Kalpa, creation, Samplava, in the inundation, Vinashtam, devastated, Iha, in this material world, Atma, the spirit, Tattvam, truth, Samyat, incomplete, Jagada, became manifested, Munaya, sages, yet that which Achakshuta saw clearly, Atman, the spirit. Taptam tapo vivida loka sushrikshaya me.
Taptam tapo vivida loka sushrikshaya me.
Ada sanat svatapasa sachatu sano bhut.
Ada sanat svatapasa sachatu sano bhut.
Prakalpa samplava vinashtami hatma tattvam. Samyag jagada munayo yada chakshutatman.
Samyag jagada munayo yada chakshutatman.
Taptam tapo vivida loka sushrikshaya me.
Taptam tapo vivida loka sushrikshaya me.
Adasanat svatapasa sachatu sano bhut. Prakalpa samplava vinashtami hatma tattvam. Samyag jagada munayo yada chakshutatman.
Samyajyagadamunayo yada chakshutatman.
Taptam tapo
Tattam tapo vivida loka sushikshaya me. Adosanasa tapasasa tatu sanabhu. Prakalpa sandhava vinashta mihatma tattvam.
Translation: to create different planetary systems, I had to undergo austerities and penance, and the Lord, thus being pleased with me, incarnated in four sunas: Sanaka, Sanatkumar, Sanandana, and Sanatana. In the previous creation, the spiritual truth was devastated, but the four sunas explained it so nicely that the truth at once became clearly perceived by the sages. The Prabhupada's purport. The Vishnu Sahasranam prayers mention the Lord's name as Sanat and Sanatanatama. The Lord and the living entities are both qualitatively Sanatana, or eternal, but the Lord is Sanatanatama, or the eternal in the superlative degree. Living entities are positively Sanatana, but not superlatively, because the living entities are apt to fall to the atmosphere of non-eternity. Therefore, the living entities are quantitatively different from the superlative Sanatana, the Lord. The word sun is also used in the sense of charity. Therefore, when everything is given up in charity unto the Lord reciprocates by giving himself unto the devotee. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4.11, Yeyata Mam Prapadyante. Brahmaji wanted to create the whole cosmic situation as it was in the previous millennium. And because in the last devastation, knowledge of the absolute truth was altogether erased from the universe, he desired that the same knowledge again be renovated. Otherwise, there would be no meaning in the creation. Because transcendental knowledge is a prime necessity, the ever-conditioned souls are given a chance for liberation in every millennium of creation. This mission of Brahmaji was fulfilled by the grace of the Lord when the four sunas, namely Sanaka, Sanatkumar, Sanandana, and Sanatana, appeared as his four sons. These four sunas were incarnations of the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, and as such, they explained transcendental knowledge so explicitly that all the sages could at once assimilate this knowledge without the least difficulty. By following in the footsteps of the four Kumaras, one can at once see the Supreme Personality of Godhead within oneself. Text 6. Dharmasya daksya duhitarya janishta murtyam narayamo nara iti svatapa prabhava drishvatmano bhagavato niramavalokam devyasvananga pitanati purnasheku. Right on key. Translation: to exhibit his personal way of austerity and penance, he appeared in twin forms as Narayana and Nara in the womb of Murti, the wife of Dharma, and the daughter of Daksha. Celestial beauties, the companions of Cupid, went to try to break his vows, but they were unsuccessful, for they saw that many beauties like them were emanating from him, the Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Lord, being the source of everything that be, is the origin of all austerities and penances also. Great vows of austerity are undertaken by sages to achieve success in self-realization. Human life is meant for such tapasya, with the great vow of celibacy or brahmacharya. In the rigid life of tapasya, there is no place for the association of women. Oh, the period there. I didn't see it. And because human life is meant for tapasya, for self-realization, factual human civilization, as conceived by the system of Sanatan Dharma, or the school of four castes and four orders of life, prescribes rigid dissociation from woman in three stages of life. In the order of gradual cultural development, one's life may be divided into four divisions: celibacy, household life, retirement, and renunciation. During the first stage of life, up to 25 years of age, a man may be trained as a brahmachari under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, just to understand that woman is the real binding force in material existence. If one wants to get freedom from the material bondage of conditional life, he must get free from the attraction for the form of woman. Woman, or the fair sex, is the enchanting principle for the living entities, and the male form, especially in the human being, is meant for self-realization. The whole world is moving under the spell of womanly attraction, and as soon as a man becomes united with a woman, he at once becomes a victim of material bondage under a tight knot. The desires for lording it over the material world, under the intoxication of a false sense of lordship, specifically begin just after the man's unification with a woman. The desires for acquiring a house, possessing land, having children, and becoming prominent in society, the affection for community in the place of birth, and the hankering for wealth, which are all like phantasmagoria or illusory dreams, encumber a human being, and he is thus impeded in his progress toward self-realization, the real aim of life. The brahmachari, or a boy from the age of 5 years, especially from the higher castes, namely from the scholarly parents, the brahmanas, the administrative parents, the kshatriyas, or the mercantile or productive parents, the vaishyas, is trained until 25 years of age under the care of a bona fide guru or teacher, and under strict observance of discipline, he comes to understand the values of life along with taking specific training for a livelihood. The brahmachari is then allowed to go home and enter householder life and get married to a suitable woman. But there are many brahmacharis who do not go home to become householders, but continue the life of naishtika brahmacharis without any connection with women. They accept the order of sannyas, or the renounced order of life, knowing well that combination with women is an unnecessary burden that checks self-realization. Since sex desire is very strong at a certain stage of life, the guru may allow the brahmachari to marry. This license is given to a brahmachari who is unable to continue the way of naishtika brahmacharya, and such discriminations are possible for the bona fide guru. A program of so-called family planning is needed. The householder who associates with a woman under scriptural restrictions, after a thorough training of brahmacharya, cannot be a householder like cats and dogs. Such a householder, after 50 years of age, would retire from the association of woman as a vanaprastha to be trained to live alone without the association of woman. When the practice is complete, the same retired householder becomes a sannyasi, strictly separate from woman, even from his married wife. Studying the whole scheme of disassociation from women, it appears that a woman is a stumbling block for self-realization, and the Lord appeared as Narayana to teach the principle of womanly disassociation with a vow in life. The demigods, being envious of the austere life of the rigid brahmacharis, who tried to cause them to break their vows by dispatching soldiers of Cupid. But in the case of the Lord, it became an unsuccessful attempt. When the celestial beauties saw that the Lord can produce innumerable such beauties by his mystic internal potency, and that there was consequently no need to be attracted by others externally, There is a common proverb that a confectioner is never attracted by sweetmeats. The confectioner who is always manufacturing sweetmeats has very little desire to eat them. Similarly, the Lord, by his pleasure potential powers, can produce innumerable spiritual beauties and not be the least attracted by the false beauties of material creation. One who does not know alleges foolishly that Lord Krishna enjoyed women in his Rasa Lila in Vrindavan or with his 16,000 married wives at Dwarka. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshudan Miritamena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha. So I'm not continuing the theme of Prabhupada's second purport. I'm going to talk about avatars in general. This chapter, of course, is called Scheduled Incarnations. The previous chapter was that Purusha Sukta confirmed, and we heard about the Virat Purusha and also the Vishnus, especially Garbhodakashari Vishnu and Mahavishnu also. So the context of all of this is the creation. Lord Brahma is talking about the creation. Remember Narada Muni, he proposed the idea that, are you God? It seems like maybe you're God because it seems like you're doing everything. So Lord Brahma is explaining who God is, and especially in the context of the creation. Because what makes us think there might be a God? Because of where did all this come from? We're here in this world, and naturally the idea may come, well, maybe somebody created this. So Lord Brahma has been talking about the creation, which we're stuck in. So then this next chapter, Scheduled Incarnations, you may think, well, what does this have to do with the creation? Well, of course, it has everything to do with the creation. Because what are the scheduled incarnations? They're coming into the creation. They're avatars. We're here. It's almost as if Brahma is saying, okay, you're stuck here in this material world, but don't worry. Krishna is going to come, or Lord Vishnu is going to come in his various incarnations. And here they are. Here, listen to them. Now, this is also in reply to, in the first chapter of the first canto, one of the questions the sages asked was, tell about your incarnations. So this is being done. Of course, it was first done in the third chapter of the first canto. 25 incarnations of the Lord were given. And now we're getting another list. I didn't actually count to see if all of them are covered here, but it may be. This is in some ways repeating this list. So what is this list? This list of 25, they're called Lila avatars, or they're also called Kalpa avatars. You know, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya, when he's speaking to Sanatana Goswami, he gives six different categories of avatars. And one of those categories is Lila avatars, which he doesn't cover very extensively. But these are called Lila avatars, and they're also called Kalpa avatars. Now, you may have noticed in this purport today, Prabhupada mentioned the word millennium a few times, in this millennium and so on. So Prabhupada often uses the word millennium to mean kalpa, when he's talking about a kalpa. A kalpa means a day of Brahma. So I want to go to get some context here about how these avatars appear. I want to explain that a little bit. Of course, we hear that Lord Brahma lives for dviparardhas. Now, it's kind of interesting that this word is used, because dviparardhas literally means two half puttas. So, I just discovered this recently, that a lifetime of Brahma is one putta. It's called a putta, P-A-R-A. But we usually hear his life referred to as dviparardhas, which means two half puttas, which seems a little odd. Why say two half? It's like saying, instead of saying a week, you say two half weeks. You know? So Lord Brahma's life is often, it's usually described that way, dviparardha. So he lives 50 years, and then there's a second 50 years. So maybe there's some significance to that, why it's divided in two. Anyway, that's also called the largest expanse of time. We hear about how we can break down time into different increments. It's given in the Bhagavatam in the third canto. So the largest unit of time is called dviparardha, in lifetime of Brahma. Or it's actually one putta, P-A-R-A. So in any case, so we know that Lord Brahma lives for something like 311 trillion of our years. It is an extremely long time. And of course, his lifetime is broken up just like ours is broken. He lives 100 years according to his time. And each of those years is made up of 12 months. And each of those months is made up of 30 days. Now, in our way of calculating, we have months and then we have weeks. We have 4 weeks in a month. But in Brahma's isn't broken up that way. It's broken up only in months. He has 30 days. We have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So they're named. The 7 days of the week are named. But Brahma doesn't have his week's names. He has only his month name. The days of his month. He has 30 days in every one of his months, and those are named. So of course those days also live, they last a long time. The first one, by the way, is called the Brahma Kalpa, with a long A, Brahma Kalpa. It's also called the Varaha Kalpa, Shweta Kalpa, or the Shweta Varaha Kalpa. Shweta means white, and Shweta Varaha means the white incarnation of Lord Varaha. So at least this particular day of Brahma, the first day, which is generally called Brahma Kalpa, this specific one is called the Varaha Kalpa, or the Shweta Varaha Kalpa. So it's the first day of Brahma's month. Actually, we're in, I don't know which shastra this comes from, but I've seen it, you know, mentioned in several places, that Brahma has just begun his 51st year. He's finished his first half of his life, and he's just beginning the second half of his life. So Brahma has these 30 days. Each one of these days, again, is called a kalpa. So we could kind of, you know, focus in a little more. So we know how long a kalpa is. I think you know. A kalpa is 1,000 rounds of the four yugas. The Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. There are 1,000 of those in one day of Brahma. So we look and we think, oh, it's so long. Even just Kali Yuga, it's only 432,000 years. But the four taken together are 4.3 million years. So Brahma's day is 4.3 billion years. And his night is the equal length, so 8.6 billion years. That's one day. So this kalpa, again, it's made up of 1,000 of these. One day of Brahma is made up of 1,000 of these cycles of the four ages. And then there's another way that these days are broken up. They're ruled over by different manus. And there are 14 manus in one day of Brahma. And each one of these manus is in charge of 71 of these yugas. So you multiply 14 by 71, you get approximately 1,000. So each of these manus rules over 71 of these chatur yugas, four yugas. So what we're hearing about now, again, these are, so again, think of the day of Brahma, the light part of the day, 4,300,000,000 years. So these lila avatars are called kalpa avatars because each one of these appears at least once in this day of Brahma. Generally we're hearing about, in the Bhagavatam, we're hearing about one particular day of Brahma. Although sometimes, when there's some contradiction about what takes place, then the acharyas, they resort to saying, well, this happened in a different day of Brahma, because it's sometimes done differently. Which is an interesting point about the avatars, of course, the lila avatars. They come repeatedly, but they don't necessarily do everything, they do exactly the same way. They generally have a particular mission that they come for. It's said that they, in a general way, there's a whole chapter on this in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita of Srila Rupa Goswami. The third chapter is about the Lila avatars. So there's a general statement there about how they assist the Lord Brahma, actually, maintaining the universe in different ways. They come on different missions. So but they don't necessarily do it exactly the same way. And even sometimes, some of these avatars appear more than once. Like in our... Now we're only halfway through, I guess I should mention that. So we're about halfway through this day because there are 14 manas, as I said, and now we're on the seventh, we're in the seventh one. course, at the end of his rule, apparently, will be halfway through the day. So this is Vaivasvata Manu. That's the one that we're in right now. So these avatars that we're hearing about here, we've heard. Now there's a list. Maybe I should just mention these. Go over these, who they are. Did I write this down? Oh, maybe I didn't. Anyway, we're familiar. A lot of them were familiar with Vamanadeva and Varaha and Matsya and Kurma. Actually, it begins with the Kumaras and Narada Muni. At least Narada Muni is mentioned. Is he mentioned here? I can't remember. He's mentioned in the first canto. And then, so all these different Leela avatars that we're familiar with. So most of them, I think, let's see, it's the first seven or eight, appeared in Swayambhuva Manu. They appeared. Now, I know myself, when I hear about these avatars, sometimes I think, well, did that avatar appear in Satya Yuga or Treta Yuga? But actually, they appeared, you have to put them in a different context. I was thinking, it's like if someone asked me, when did you arrive in Alachua? And I say, at 3:30 in the afternoon. And they'll say, what? But what they really want to know is what year did you, I came here 30 years ago. So it's kind of irrelevant what time of day that I arrived, or even what day of the week it was, right? So we tend to think Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga. But there's so many yugas in Vaivasvata Manu that we're in right now. We're in the 28th cycle. And he's the seventh Manu. So you have to go all the way back to Swayambhuva Manu. That gives you an idea. You know, each one of these, they last a long time. They rule for a long time. 71 Chatur Yugas. So seven, that's a really long time. So most of these, at least half of these, they in this list, they appeared during Swayambhuva Manu's reign. In the beginning of the day. They get up early, they have a job to do. So while Swayambhuva Manu was ruling, that's when about half of them appeared. So that was a really long time ago, billions of years ago, many billions of years ago. And then some of them, I think there's another four, appeared during Chakshusha Manu. Lord Varaha and Lord Vamana appeared twice. No, actually Vamana appears three times. He already appeared three times during this day of Brahma. And it's not even half over yet. And the one we know about is the third one. The one that we hear about in the Bhagavatam is his third appearance during this kalpa. So again, most of these avatars, they appeared a really long time ago, way back in Swayambhuva Manu's reign. Now, the reason I started looking into this was, it says in the purport, to the second verse, about how Narayana Rishi, they appeared in the womb of Murti, the wife of Dharma, and the daughter of Daksha. So I was thinking, the daughter of Daksha, now where does that put her in the scheme of things? So I started researching it a little bit, trying to figure this out. And now the first thing, a little something about Daksha. Daksha is born, he's a direct son of Brahma. Lord Brahma has 10 direct sons. I got 3 pages here. I can't find anything. Anyway, I have all these lists. Anyway, there are 10 sons of Brahma. And Daksha is one of them. And in fact, Narada Muni is the last one. Narada Muni, but Daksha is born from his thumb, right? And Narada Muni is born from Brahma's thumb. And Narada Muni is born from Brahma's deliberation, as Prabhupada says, or the verse says, is the best part. So Narada, of course, he's a Shaktyavesha avatar, he's invested with bhakti. Just as the Kumaras are invested with jnana, that shakti, Narada Muni is invested with the bhakti shakti. So actually, Daksha and Narada are brothers, at least in the beginning, at least in Brahma's first birth. They were both born from Lord Brahma. So we know in the fourth canto we hear about Daksha and the sacrifice that went on and all this. And so what happens, of course, he offends Lord Shiva, and at the end he gets his head cut off, so he dies. So this was during the reign of Swayambhuva Manu. So then we hear, later on, that Daksha appears during the reign of the Chakshusha Manu, which is the sixth Manu. So he's out of the scene. He leaves the stage from the time of Swayambhuva Manu, who's the first Manvantara. So first, second, third, fourth, fifth. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains what was Daksha doing during that time before he appeared as Chakshusha Manu. He was performing austerities. Because he still had a job to do. He's one of the Prajapatis. He's supposed to help populate the universe. So he was performing austerities, both for purification and also to prepare for his service. So we hear about Daksha's making his appearance. There's a whole backstory of that. This is tied in with the Prachetas. You may remember how the Prachetas, they were... Actually, this is one thing that's interesting. I'm not sure how this works exactly, but it's said that when, way back during Swayambhuva Manu, King Prachina, or King Barhi is mentioned. Now, I don't know if that's the same Barhi who's Prachina Barhi later and is the father of the Prachetas, because that would be, some Manvantaras later. But some of these personalities lived for an extremely long time. Actually, it's said in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita that Narada and the Kumaras, they lived through all the kalpas. Now, that's the way Gopi Pranadanapu mentions it in the commentary. I don't know if he means that all the kalpas in the whole life of Brahma, or whether he means just during 1 month of Brahma, or what. It seems like... Does Narada Muni and the Kumaras, do they live as long as Lord Brahma? I suppose it's possible. Although we hear that Narada seems to, we know that he kind of comes and goes. So anyway, so this, what was I talking about? I lost my train of thought. Oh, Prachinabarhi. Okay, I was talking about the birth of Daksha. So the Prachetas, they performed great austerities, and then when they came out, it was while they got instruction from Lord Shiva. So they, after they performed their austerities, they came out and they started burning, because the whole world was covered with trees. They didn't like that. So they started burning everything. And then the moon god came and calmed them down and then offered Pramlocha. They married this Pramlocha. And by her, she was raised by some sage in the forest. And from her, they conceived Lord Brahma. Somehow, all 10 of them had one son. And that's not explained how that happened. But somehow, the son of the 10 Prachetas is Daksha. So then from Daksha, so this is Daksha's second birth. So Daksha, he married different daughters. One of his daughters was married to Dharma. Actually, Daksha married some of these same personalities, married daughters of Daksha in the beginning. And now we're hearing about how some of these daughters of Daksha, they married these different personalities. So Dharmaraj is one of them. Of course, Dharmaraj is Yamaraj. Sometimes he's referred to as Dharma, sometimes he's referred to as Yamaraj, sometimes he's referred to as Dharmaraj. Seems to be all the same person. So Daksha married a bunch of them, actually. I think like 13 of them, something like that. Because Daksha, he had 60 daughters. You may remember the story. Daksha was supposed to help populate the universe. So he created somehow these. First, he created the Hariyashvas, 60,000 of them, and Narada convinced them all to take sannyas. Then he created 1,000, right? Savalashvas, and then he convinced them to take sannyas. And then Daksha got really upset with his former brother and offended him. Said, "You don't really know what dharma is. I was training them to be good dharmis, but you made them, deviate from their duty." So he got pretty offensive, actually. Daksha did. But then he said, "Well, I guess I'm not going to win with boys, so I have to create girls." So this time he created 60 daughters. So then we hear from that in the sixth canto, we hear how they're the ones that created all these things, and that we hear about the snakes and the scorpions and the cities. I always wonder, how do you create a city? You know, this daughter created New York City. What? What is a city? How do you create a city? Is the people and buildings? And I don't know what that means. I have no idea. Of course, I have no idea how the whole thing works anyway. You know, how do they create all of these things? But somehow or other, they created all of these things. So we have these long periods. This is part of what I'm trying to point out. We have Daksha, he's appearing in Swayambhuva Manavi. He comes back later in the sixth Manvantara. And now we're in the seventh. Now some of the who appeared during that Chakshusha Manu, some who appeared, the Kalpa avatars, that's when the... actually, this was something that I was trying to figure out, because what confused me about this was when in the list of Daksha's daughters, Aditi and Aditi are mentioned. And I was thinking, Aditi and Aditi, they didn't appear until Chakshusha Manu? I always think of them as way back at the beginning of the universe. Because Nrisingadev and Hiranyakshi, Hiranyakashipu, I mean, I tend to think of it way in the beginning. But actually, it turns out that they didn't appear until the Chakshusha Manu. This is explained in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Rupa Goswami gives an argument for why it has to be that Hiranyaksha was killed by Lord Varaha during the Chakshusha Manu. And Hiranyakashipu also, this took place during Chakshusha Manu. And so that's when they made their appearance, not during Swayambhuva, they appeared during Chakshusha. And also during Chakshusha Manu was the churning of the milk ocean. That happened then. Now that's clearly stated in the Bhagavatam. So they churned the milk ocean, so involved, so their Leela avatars connected with that pastime, of course, with that Leela. Kurmadev is of course, there, and Dhanvantari and Mohini Murti. So these three Leela avatars, they appear during that Chakshusha Manu. So then we sometimes think, well, we tend to think again about that. We get hung up sometimes about these Yuga avatars. We hear about the red incarnation, the white incarnation. We're trying to figure out, because their names aren't given. Some people say, well, maybe it's this one, maybe it's that one. I've heard an explanation about Kapila. Some people say that Kapila is the white incarnation, but I think this is actually speculation because it's not stated. But the reason they say this is because when Lord Vishnu appears to Kardama Muni, there he's called Shukla. So Shukla means white. And when he comes later to Kardama Muni, when he appears as Kapila, he says, I told you I was going to come and be your son, and now here I am, I'm your son. So people think, well, that's Shukla, now he's come as Kapila. But it's not directly stated like that. So we wonder about these avatars, and Lord Ram, when did he appear? Now this is amazing. I came across this in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. I think I've mentioned this before. So again, we're in the 28th cycle of the Yugas. That's when our Vyasadeva appeared. We hear about this. This is in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're in the 28th cycle of the four Yugas of Vaivasvata Manu. But in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, now Rupa Goswami doesn't mention his source, but I've heard it's from one of the Puranas. I'm thinking Varaha Purana, but I'm not 100% sure of that. He says that Lord Ramchandra appeared during the 24th cycle. So if you do the arithmetic, that's something like 18 billion years ago. So, you know, a while ago. Is that right? 18 million, right. Oh, wait a minute. 4,300,000. Anyway, I won't do the arithmetic, but it's a long time ago. I did it somewhere here. We tend to think, I think most of us, we think, well, Lord Ram appeared in the previous Treta Yuga that we just had, you know, before Dwapara Yuga. But that's not what the Shastra says, apparently. So this bridge that goes from India to Sri Lanka must have been there a really long time. It's amazing the waves haven't washed it away yet. Lord Ram was here a really, really long time ago. So again, we tend to think. So that means during the recent Treta Yuga, some other form of the Lord appeared. Now, I don't know actually how often Lord Ram appears. Some of these avatars, they appear repeatedly. Because we have all these divisions again. That's why we had this verse in the first canto about how the avatars are coming like endless rivulets of water coming from inexhaustible sources. So they're just coming and coming because we have all of these. We have the Manvantara avatars, we have the Leela avatars, we have the Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, and all of these Yuga avatars. There's so many of those, because so many Yugas in the day of Brahma. And of course, each one of there's Manvantara, just like their Yuga avatars. For each Yuga, there's a particular avatar. We know that. Lord Chaitanya is the Yuga avatar for Kali Yuga this time around. And Krishna is the Yuga avatar for Dwapara Yuga and so on. We generally hear that, we don't know again, Treta and Satya, it's hard to figure it out. But besides Yuga avatars, which are assigned to or they take charge of a different Yuga, they give the religious practice for that age. There are also Manvantara avatars. For each Manu, there's a particular avatar. And these are listed in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto and other places. How during this Manvantara, the Lord appeared in this form. And he's specially there to assist the Manu who's in charge during that time. Now the Manvantara for the current Manu, Vaivaswata Manu, is Lord Vamanadeva. So he's a Leela avatar, or a Kalpa avatar, as they're called, but he's also a Manvantara avatar. So there are so many of these. And so therefore we tend to hear the same ones again, but it's because the Bhagavatam, for the most part, is focusing in on a very relatively short period of time, actually. Just, some part of it. We hear mostly, actually, about what's going on during this reign of Vaivaswata Manu. And even during this particular Chatur Yuga. Because this whole genealogy that takes place in the Bhagavatam, which is sort of the structure of what's being spoken, it's all, generally, a lot of it is in the context of this succession of kings. So this is all happening during this particular Chatur Yuga. So this is, that's nothing if you compare it to, the whole reign of Vaivaswata Manu, and then the one before that, and the one before that, and the one before that. And that's just, one insignificant part of one day of Lord Brahma. And there are avatars just standing in all of this, like every moment, practically, if you look at it from Brahma's point of view, at every moment, some avatar of the Lord is descending into the creation to help the living entities who are suffering here. So Lord Brahma thought it appropriate to inform Narada Muni and us about the Kalpa avatars, those who are appearing within this day of Lord Brahma. That's what we're hearing about in this chapter and in different places in this our version of the Bhagavatam. All right, that's a little something. Forgot 90% of what I wanted to say, but a few little facts there for you. Ganga Narayana Prabhu. Oh, okay. Radhakanta Prabhu.
Sorry. Please don't give us a quiz on this presentation you just made.
Can't give myself one.
So in the purport to the first verse we read, Srila Prabhupada says, this mission of Brahmaji, which would be to renovate transcendental knowledge in the universe, was fulfilled by the grace of the Lord when the four Kumaras appeared as his four sons. Now, I thought the four Kumaras were impersonalists.
Well, not after they saw Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha. Actually, they're Shanta Bhaktas. I was just reading this last night in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. They're the emblem of Shanta Rasa. So they have, what is Shanta Rasa? It's appreciating the Lord, especially His beauty. That's what attracted them in Vaikuntha. First, actually, they came overwhelmed just by the fragrance. of the tulsi mixed with saffron. Tasya Aravinda, Nayanasya Pada Aravinda, it's a nice version of third canto. So they were transformed from impersonalists. And they'd actually been meditating on the Lord in the heart, as mentioned in some places, which is confusing because we think of them as impersonalists. They're generally said to be impersonalists. But when they saw Lord Vishnu, then they became Shanta Bhaktas. Because when you get the darshan of the Lord, it's so overwhelming. That's what Shanta Rasa is about, really. The awe. You're in awe of some aspect of the Lord. Actually, there's a distinction made between the Lord's qualities and the Lord's form. Different Shanta Rasas, Shanta Bhaktas appreciate in different ways. So they experience first the quality, you might say, the fragrance of the Lord. And then they experience his actual darshan. So that was transformative. So they're bhaktas. And of course they have a sampradaya also. The Kumara Sampradaya is one of the four Vaishnava Sampradayas. That's a Nimbarka, right? Okay. Yeah, so they're bhaktas, Shanta bhaktas.
But here also Srila Prabhupada describes them as incarnations of the knowledge of the Supreme Lord. So wouldn't that be fully manifest when they were born from Brahma? But why would they were born impersonalists, but they're yet called incarnations of the knowledge of the Supreme Lord?
It's funny, when I read this, I thought this is ambiguous because the phrase knowledge of the Lord, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. The Lord's knowledge or knowledge about Him, right? Isn't it ambiguous? So it seems to be the what is here means knowledge about the Lord. In other words, transcendental knowledge. Now, of course, the Lord has different aspects. Brahman is also knowledge about the Lord, because Brahman is the Lord also. Paramatma is also the Lord. It's all the Lord. It's all Brahman. Brahman is Krishna. He's just appreciated in different ways. So there are especially Jnana Bhaktas. That was another thing I was just reading last night, is there are Jnanis who they actually want liberation. We don't like the word liberation. We don't talk about liberation, but there are some devotees who want liberation. They think their concept is, first I have to get liberation, then I can become a devotee. Because now that I'm a conditioned soul, I can't really be a devotee. So let me become liberated first by tapasya, then I'll be purified, then I can actually be a devotee. So in any case, they cultivate jnana, of course, but they're jnanis, the tapasvis and jnanis, they're kind of in the same boat. They cultivate knowledge of the Lord. That's what they do. So I think that's what's being referred to. That's their shakti. They have the jnana shakti. They know about the Lord in theory. Of course, they may not know rasa tattva. That's another thing. We have to have Rupa Goswami teach us that.
Prabhu, in this purport that you read at the beginning, they renovated knowledge of the Lord, which was formerly devastated.
Yeah.
So why did Brahma become so angry at them when they refused to be a Prajapati?
I guess it's Brahma's Leela, why these things, why they all unfold. Actually, I have another thing I've always wondered about in that context where it says why the Kumaras did this, why they refused Brahma's order. Because it says because they were Vasudeva Parayana. So I'm thinking, Vasudeva Parayana, that means devotee. Usually Vasudeva Parayana means one who's a devotee of Vasudeva. Now sometimes, of course, the word Vasudeva is sometimes taken impersonally, at least by the impersonalist, because Vasudeva means spread everywhere. One whose residence is everywhere. That's literally what Vasudeva means. So they think of that as a name for the impersonal Brahman. So maybe that's actually what it means there in the Bhagavatam. Of course, we don't generally think of it that way. So why did Brahma get angry? I always think of why questions. There's so many different ways to answer why questions. So one answer to why is so Lord Shiva could appear. That's one why. That's one answer. He Lord Shiva made his appearance in a dramatic way. Came onto the scene from between Brahma's eyebrows. Well, that can be one reason. And of course, Brahma is also, he has the mode of passion in him. So sometimes it slips out a little bit of it leaks out. So that's another answer to why, because he's Lord Brahma, he's Guna Avatar. He's full of passion, right? And there's a reason for that also, of course. Why? Because you have to have these three things. Everything makes sense, actually. It's not just arbitrary goodness, passion, and ignorance. These things are, you know, they're gunas. They're what ties things together. They tie the package together. It doesn't really work unless you have these three kinds of activity or passivity. You have the impulse for creation, then you have maintenance, and then the whole thing gets destroyed again because it's a material world. So you have to have tamas, sattva, and rajas. So Lord Brahma has his function to fulfill, and he's you know, invested with that power, guna avatar. So that's another explanation why I get angry, because what is angry? Raja guna samudbhava. Anger grows out of the mode of passion.
Basically, it's like a lila for the purpose of...
Well, yeah, as I was explaining, that's... And you can also, you know, Brahma's a great personality, so he can do things that are ordinarily maybe condemnable, but because he's Brahma, we're not allowed to criticize. Unless we can do what he does, we're not allowed to criticize. So we don't think we can get even close, can we? Yes.
You were talking about the first half of Brahma's life and the second half. Now, sometimes you have it where a person, before he became a devotee, that's one half of his, part yeah. of his life. The other part is when he becomes the devotee. So with Lord Brahma, he has it in the first part of his life, he worships Nilamadava. And the second part of his life, he worships Lord Jagannath.
Hmm.
So that's one thing. And then you were also talking about the Kumaras. In Shantaras, now, they also have this Sanat Kumar Sanita, mm-hmm. which actually goes into Radha Krishna Madhurya Leela, and whether that's knowledge about, like Mataji was saying, knowledge of the Lord, or, you know, so that's another aspect. So in Shantaras, being able to have knowledge of Madhurya Leela, but not entering into it, and that's just another aspect.
Yeah. It's interesting. I read that Sanat Kumar Samhita. I came across it in Vrindavan, and I read it there. I was really surprised. This is really intimate Madhurya Leela, detailed, talking about different mantras and how to really worship the Lord in Madhurya. I thought, this is by one of the Kumaras? That doesn't seem right, but it's there. So they know. So again, so I was wrong in saying you don't get the rasa from them, because you can also get rasa from them. From the Kumaras. So these extraordinary personalities, it's hard to pin them down to one definition. That's one thing we can learn. They're Mahatmas. They can go beyond our conceptions.
Anything? So I have a question. In the Bhagavad Gita 4.1, Srila Prabhupada talks about Lord Ram's birth, and he talks about the Bhagavad Gita being present for about 2 million years, mm-hmm. and that being the time of the birth of Maharaj Ikshvaku, and so that would mean that Lord Ram was born after that. So I wonder how that correlates with.
Yeah, this is a kind of an outlier, you might say. This idea that when Ram was born in the 24th, and now we're in the 28th, I think it's only mentioned in one place, in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Rupa Goswami mentions it. So apparently this is not the conventional wisdom. Generally people think that Lord Ram appeared in the Treta Yuga that we're familiar with, and Prabhupada most likely in different places would refer to it that way, because that's generally the way people talk about it. But there is this, you know, one mention of it in Lagu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami, so it's hard to say it's not authoritative, because Rupa Goswami said it, but at the same time it's generally not thought of that way. So generally when we hear about Ram, we tend to think he was here in the last Treta Yuga. So.
Thank you.
Madam Matip.
I always wondered where these pastimes, like we hear in the Bhagavatam, so many pastimes, different avatars and everything, are they kind of taking place on earth, or are they taking place in there?
Yeah, I've wondered about that too. A lot of times it seems like they're taking place on earth. We read in the Bhagavatam that sometimes, that, like Rishabhdev, for example, now that's definitely, that's a little clearer, I think. But Vamanadev, that seems to take place on earth. Because it says, I forget, but anyway, I was mentioning, you read some often about the Brahma Varta or Arya Varta. And these are generally, this is in North India, it's generally said to be the area between the Ganges and the Yamuna. So we hear a lot of things that take place in that area. But like Nrsingadev, for example, where was that? Where was his palace? Where was Prahlad going to school? When Prabhupada was told about Ahobalam, because in Ahobalam they say, you know, there's this one big rock, and they say this is where Nrsingadev appeared. This is the pillar that Nrsingadev appeared from to kill Hiranyakashipu. And when Prabhupada was told that, he said, maybe. Some of these things, they're not necessarily, you know. It's hard to understand where these things take place a lot of times. Now we hear about the churning of the milk ocean in Dhanvantari, in the pot of nectar, isn't that? All the Kumbh Melas, they have to do with that Leela. So that seems like it was taking place out in the sky somewhere, I don't know, up in space or something. Where exactly? Now, of course, people say that the mythologists, the Milky Way is, you know, that the Leela of the churning of the milk ocean was invented because of the Milky Way. So they came up, you know, this mythology arose because people see. Now, we don't really see it because there's so much light pollution. But if you go to a really dark place in a dark sky, you can really see it. And it really looks like a river going through the sky. It's so thick with stars. So anyway, where that took place, that Leela, it's hard to say where all these things take place. But somehow, because even Manu, you know, where we know Swayambhuva Manu, that's one example. It says that he ruled in that Aryavarta, which is on earth. Apparently, the way the Bhagavatam presents it, Manu's place was on earth. But Manu is, you know, he has... Sometimes he's talking about as a universal ruler. Prabhupada refers to him that way. So what kind of powers he has, it's hard to say. And of course we also know that human beings are called manusya, which means they come from Manu, although I've heard a different interpretation of that also. So you would think only the human beings on earth come from Manu, but, well, we know his daughters created all kinds of things. Are there celestials in there too? I think so, created by Brahma's Daksha's daughters. So, it's really hard to make sense of where all of these things take place. And of course, the universe is so vast and has so many divisions, and it couldn't get it all in. Only 18,000 verses. You have to study it on Brahmaloka, where there's billions of verses.
Yeah, and then the time factor comes. You know, we're dealing with... these demigods with their time,
yeah.
Which is built, and then it's happening on the earth, and how does it all work? And
I think of that too. It's like when if you're in heaven, then the yugas must be flying by down below there. Don't you? So you think, to interact between those different spheres and different times. I was mentioning this in my last class, I think, about how, especially when you think of the spiritual world and the material world. What is that about? There's something in science called boundary states, I think, you know, where two things come together, weird things happen. So where the material meets the spiritual, what exactly is going on? How do these two, a place where there's time and a place where there's no time, or where the time is different? We have this story, of course, of Kukudmi going to Brahmaloka and millions of years go by in the meantime. But then you think of the avatars and going in different places. Even Vamanadev, now he's on Indraloka. So, there's a lot there.
It's it's stated in the Mahabharata that when Bhima is going in the Himalayan mountains, he comes across a monkey who has a tail across the path. Mm-hmm. And the monkey said, "Well, I'm old." He said, "I can't move my tail. You move it." And so then Bhima goes and tries, and he tries, and he really tries, and then finally goes, uh-oh, he says, I think this is actually Hanuman. So then he addresses him and offers his obeisances. And then immediately Bhima says, show me the form that you manifested in the time of Ram Lila. And he said, no, he said, I can't do that. He said, according to the time, according to the rivers, the land, the mountains, the men, everything adjusts according to the time. So I can't manifest that form. But Bhima kept begging him, so then finally he said, all right, and then he showed it, you know. Expands, you know, unlimitedly. And then, so, there you have it. But that's also mentioned in many Puranas. There's, I have three other quotes like that, which tell that according to the yuga, everything adjusts.
Yeah.
So that's like right now, the whole thing about the flat earth and the globular earth, like that. And in other ages, things were open more than they are now. So it's just, it's one of the angles too.
Yeah, there seems to be evidence even, you know, ordinary people, they study the earth and things that are there, and they say it must have been different in the past. You know, they talk about giants, for example. There seems to be evidence that they were actually giants, and how they built these amazing things so long ago, which we can't do today. We don't even have, even with our technology and big cranes and all these things. As the time is passes, the yugas, everything diminishes. Day after day, anudinam, the Bhagavatam says, day by day, everything is diminishing. Especially the good qualities of human beings are diminishing day by day. All right, we'll stop here.